Glad to see all of you. Hope the wind didn't blow you totally off the road today. And you manage to respond well. This company and we certainly have forum problem. We have a motion to accept the minutes.
Something.
Second. All right. Thank you, Jim. Any questions or comments? I know Jim, you already said engineers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Good. Done. Kristen took responsibility to get speaker tonight. So I'm going to let her do the introductions and I'll just sit down for a second.
Well,
oh, you thought.
So very lucky to have Bob back to me in the here tonight for environmental, Greenway Environmental Services. Their company's been in the composting business since about 1997. And up till now, they've been mainly in large industrial clients, the local colleges, Vassar, Paris. But a couple of years ago, they approached the town of Burley about starting a composting program, a collection of food waste and composting program in order to help get us to zero waste, which is, I think, everyone in the county is talking about this issue. And so they early contracted with them to set up a pilot program. And so they're here to talk about that. They've also been doing the waste collection program for the Garlic Festival last 3 years, which I've participated in as a volunteer. And they can talk about how the success of that and the amazing amount of waste they've been able to divert from an event like that. Thousands of people.
Hi, I am Josephine, and actually I just wanted to modify that a little bit, that Shabazz, we did incorporate Greenway in 1997, but Shabazz has done some form of food waste management. He had back in, you have to help me out here, 72, maybe an actual worm farm where he was selling pounds of worms to people who wanted to do permaculture. So he's an early adapter. That's all I wanted to say. So this presentation is going to give you a sense of three of our pretty big projects. You can go to the next one. So our first one is in the town of Burley. I'm sure most of you probably know Melinda McKnight came down to see our composting and walk through our facility. She actually came to our house. She really kicked the tires. And so she put together the initial outreach to get Greenway to come to Burley and establish a zero waste system. So what we did, we like that peeling the onion, getting right to the bottom of it. We said, well, let's evaluate the households and characterize their waste. And what we found that we could get people to volunteer to separate their waste and to weigh everything. And we also, in the course of doing that, we said, if you're gonna separate after food waste, we will install, you've probably seen them, they look like, beehives or whatever, they're called bird machines, but there's a lot of names for them. So we installed them in their backyards. So a quick thing of why our system won't always work is some of the complaints which we've had in our early days was when you collect food waste in your house, you get those really pesky fruit flies.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how hard you try, even when you have the lid on, the minute you take them off, they're swarming. So we have this material that we developed. And I say, I sound like I'm here to sell it. We're not even selling it yet. So it's just, we have this material, it's called odor control blend, and you mix it in your collection bucket. So you have like a 5-gallon bucket that you use in your house before you bring it outside. And you put some on the bottom, you put in some food waste, you put more, like a lasagna. Then you bring it out to your, whatever system you're using to compost it in, the earth machine. We have other ways we do it too. And we have this other material to get people started. Because people who have never composted don't have the patience and the faith to believe that if I just wait, it will compost. We have this rapid decomposition material, which is very active compost mixed with large wood chips. So that kickstarts it. Within 60 days, the food waste that they put in day one is compost. I would say that it's ready to be put on their garden because you want to have it be stable before you do that. But it is compost. What we did find is that households who separate their food waste out from their garbage collect, they're able to recover about 80% of their material. And households who don't are only recovering about 24%. And that was across the board, everyone. Sorry. So we did we analyzed the transfer station because eventually that is going to be a repository for that food waste. And of course, the big question is like, who's going to pay for it? How is it going to happen? And what we were able to show is that the transfer station is a very profitable organization. Now, there's no labor taken out of that, but you can see that it's a healthy operating group, and I'm sure Hurley is no different than the other transfer stations, that they operate at a positive, a net positive. Next one. So our conclusions for Hurley is that the demand for transfer station services are going to increase. As you may know, the cost to dispose of trash is going up constantly, so that eventually there's going to be a tipping point where people are going to start to say, you know what, I'm going to bring all my stuff to the transfer station because my hauler is going to have to start charging me more. And the Resource Recovery Agency has actually told us that there would be an increase in 2025, which we've already seen one increase. At Hurley, the existing workforce handles about 1,500 tons per year material that comes in. That is without the benefit of any equipment. So the addition of food waste is going to be about another 300 tons of material, because estimating how much food waste is in the trash and how much trash they currently are taking in, it turns out to be about 300 tons. So in order to prepare the site for that increase in demand and usage, it's going to require a backhoe. We have already filed for a grant where that is hopefully going to be paid for. We haven't heard back. I don't know if it's good or bad. And that backhoe is also going to be used to handle things like what that transfer station does, which is, again, pretty profitable, is they upgrade the metal. So when people bring in metal, they separate it, and you get the highest price covering that metal. So the next piece of this presentation is the Hudson Valley Garlic Festival. We were approached by the Kiwanis Club of Sororities if we would be interested in trying to convert this festival to a zero waste festival. And we said, well, what are you doing now? They said nothing. all of the garbage is in piles that go down the middle of the midway, because you put cans there, but it gets so busy that people just keep throwing everything. It's just literally piles of garbage. Because we never gone to the garden festival, so we didn't know. So we said, oh, we'll do this thing. It was a big undertaking. And year one, we got about 120 volunteers, and we went everywhere to get them. Because the high schools, all of them were already, those kids were already working like the ticket booths and that kind of stuff. So we got the zero waste volunteers. We set up, I think, 10 collection stations. And the volunteers never leave the collections. The collection stations never are left unmonitored. So as people attending the festival, they get 30,000 to 40,000 people to this festival. Say, as they're attending it, they have their stuff in their hands, there's no garbage cans. They have to walk up to one of those tents and be told, put that here, put that. Next slide, please. So the first thing we do is getting it separated is one thing, but you have to manage it once it's separated. So we set up what we call a pop-up transfer station. Up in the upper left, that's for cans and bottles. We have learned we need one of those because most of the vendors are selling their lemonade and their stuff in those big cups. So you don't need that for the cans and bottles. Down on the lower right, that is the trash. This middle one is your food waste collected, and those are compostable bags. And what you see there is what I had talked about, that rapid decomposition material. We line the, that's a 20-yard roll-off. We line that with that material, and that keeps it from the juice from all the food from running out. It keeps the flies and the bees down. And then in the far left there on the bottom, that's a 30-yard cardboard. Prior to this, all years past, there were 5 or 6 30-yarders that went as trash, 100% trash, because nothing was separated to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. So this was an enormous switch. Next slide, please. Here's a, you know, a, just an idea of what these zero waste collection stations look like. And you can see here we had Kirsten and Amanda LaBelle and her two daughters volunteered. Next slide. Once the festival's over and everything is cleaned up, they bring, this material is brought to our compost facility down in Clintondale. It can be brought anywhere. It's not like, you know, you're a captive audience. The food waste comes in, we break it up with, up on the upper left there, we break it up with the teeth of the X, we break those bags open because material compost better when it's, you know, all the decomposers. Down on the bottom there, we blend it with that hot, active compost, which we have mountains of it. And after 24 hours, it has, and we cover it with a thick covering of chips because that deters any of the birds or anything that wants to come and figure out what you have here. And you can see here, after 24 hours, it's up to almost 160 degrees. So it's a really hot compost system, which, by the way, we always invite people to come and see it because it's pretty impressive, really. Next slide. The collection results, year 2023, we only recovered 72%. It was a really, really rainy weekend. And I, if you've been there, you see they put hay bales all the way out so people sit on them. But they got soaking wet. None of the farmers would take it. So we could only take so much in the 220 orders we had. The rest of that went out as garbage, unfortunately. One of the things we're going to tackle this coming season is we've learned most of the trash at these events is really generated by the food vendors at the end of the day. They're exhausted. They want to throw everything in a big plastic bag and put it out. So this coming year, we're going to put together with the Kiwanis Club a what we call a vendor kitchen, just like in your own kitchen. You have your trash, you have your cardboard, you have, you know, and I think you're going to see a tremendous change in that. That remains to be seen. And the last piece of this presentation is the expansion of zero waste events. We have been asked over and over to do the county fair, to do the Pickle Festival. The reality is you need hands-on people to do this. Last year we did the Garlic Festival. We had about 80 people, and there was no room. I had 80 volunteers, and there was no spare. If someone just said, I'm going to be late, it was like, oh, my God. Because the biggest thing is keeping the coverage. The minute you don't have something covered, people just throw. You know, it's so the challenge is to assemble the work for the festivals. And we have demonstrated the willingness through the volunteers that zero waste events are definitely successful. And tourism, as you people probably know better than most, in Ulster County attracts about 4 million visitors a year, when Ulster County's population is about 160,000. So when you start to think about these 4 million people coming in with all their garbage, basically. And it shows that visitors are really willing to participate in zero waste events. They talk to the people working in the stations, they thank them, they write us notes after the festival. I've never been to a place that was so well managed. It's pretty encouraging. So the solution is to have a group of zero waste event workers. We've called them zero work. Train the workers and pay the workers a minimum wage. So we did a little math, and this one's just based on the Garlic Festival. So to pay all the runners, the cleanup guys, the whole thing, and I always build in a little contingency, it's about $8,000. And that's less than probably 35 cents a ticket. And I think people wouldn't they could charge me a buck extra, whatever it is. I think people attending festivals would be very willing to pay that. So the concept, volunteers are replaced and trained as a paid collection staff. The organizers and staff learn how to design a zero-waste system. Public works people, because you need them with in town facilities and parks to be part of the program. So they would be trained to design, install, and operate that pop and transfer station. We have identified, and it's not in stone, you know, we're open to suggestions. Cantine Field in Saugerties is an excellent training location because they have all kinds of events. And it's my time on something else. They would learn, you know, they have a lot of musical events, a lot like the Garlic Festival. Then they have all these athletic things. Their baseball fields there are like almost professional quality. So then we get to funding the project. And the development concept would be paid for by grants. And the grants that we have had some success with is the food waste diversion grants. There's also, which we have not yet pursue, but we will. There's workforce development funding that's available for these green entry jobs. We know the cost of disposal is predicted to reach $250 a ton, where the disposal for the organic waste is $40 a ton. That gives you quite a range to play with. The avoidance cost on disposal offsets the additional cost for what we call that point of disposal collection. We have to have those people there. During full operation, the cost will be paid for by ticket and vendor booth fees, and paid event staff funding goes to local people instead of landfills. You just stop and think about it. Where's all that money? I mean, they're paying that money to truck it and dispose of it. And we visualized a lot of young people and a lot of seniors who would say, you know what, I'll do it. I would like to do something like that. Or anyone else in between, too. Next steps. The legislature allocated $25,000 in the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee budget to expand zero waste. That's been approved. That's in there. They're going to issue an RFP to hire the consultant with experience for organizing zero waste events. And then the consultant would provide the technical assistance for the grant application and conduct the training. That's the basic format of this. That's repetitious. I'm sorry, that funny thing. It's worth repeating. But what we see as this council, because we feel that you represent the county's communities, all of you, and that you have a political and social power to bring public awareness that about what's being done, about what can be done, what needs to be done. This, to us, is the essential step in realizing Ulster's commitment to zero waste. You can write letters of support to the committee, and you can request updates to the committee on their support of zero waste. There might be one more. No? Okay. The last piece of that, that's why I thought maybe I may put that in there, was there is a zero waste implementation plan that was written in 2019 that has not been brought into the Ulster County Solid Waste Management Plan. And that implementation plan for zero waste is very clear that the path is that you need to do demonstration projects, you need to have feet on the ground doing stuff. So that would, again, be something that I see this committee having the ability to say, you know, I can send out a copy of that document. You know, we've put all that effort. I know Europa, I don't know if she's gone, but, oh, sorry. Europa and I worked really, really long, hard hours on that. So, and it's got good stuff. Maybe it needs to be updated a little, but that would be a big step. And again, anyone who wants to talk to us, you can get our information pretty easily. We would love to invite you to come. Questions? Yes,
Well, are you taking on other towns other than Hurley for doing the same kind of thing?
We will. We will. Yes. We have a system that we do, and we kind of outline that pretty roughly, that we really look at it like you have to do it step by step. You cannot rush to the end zone in this one. You have to really be methodical. And we had people in Burley who were like, this is ridiculous, but I'll give it a try because they happen to like us. And they now are completely converted. I mean, like, we did demonstrations at their house. I remember the one couple, their lawn was so manicured, I thought it was walking on a carpet. It was that fluffy. And I was like, oh, I don't know how this is going to work. And she's one of our biggest supporters. She's canceled her garbage pickup. You know, like that kind of stuff. And these are people who are total, like, meatheads, I guess. Yes.
So do you have bears raiding the compost pile in Hurley?
No, they have had, and we have found that the bears do not recognize the earth machine as a source of food. So those, we have one couple who had bears, and we said, well, how about we do this? We take this earth machine, we don't set it up where you had your pile of stuff, because that's what it was, they were feeding bears, and we'll put it in another area, no bears. Because using this other material that we use, the odor control blend and the rapid decomposition, they don't have the odors either. So between the shape of this thing, we have not had a complaint of bears. So not one.
And what about at the waste center where all the compost ends up? bears there?
At the transfer station. We haven't started that yet, but I don't think you will, because I think you're going to have a similar thing, because it's going to be the use of those same materials. The key, and that's what I was trying to say, I'm not here hawking that material. The key is it's a real advance in composting in urban, somewhat urban, suburban areas, where in the past there's been problems, the raccoons, the skunks, and all that. They don't see it as food. And as long as they don't see it as food, and Shabazz will tell you, I mean, he has the crows completely tripped. They don't know. They can say his name, what I say. So there's, yes.
How many days is the transfer station open to the next
when they start?
Oh, yeah. How?
They will be open 5 days. They're closed, I think. And they're all different, but I think Pearly's closed Monday and Tuesday. So much
Sunday
and Monday, right? Whereas where we live, I go to the one in Platteville, and they're open. They're closed Monday and Tuesday, right? They're open the other days.
Yeah, we only have ours open for 2 days.
Where are you?
That's not open.
Okay. But that should not be a problem if people are using like I say, that layering system to the food waste can hold for easily a week. They bring it from, you know, unless they want to compost at home.
Yeah, I compost.
That's what I'm saying. It's what we wanted was to make a system that is that can serve all the different people. We have another system right on Huguenot Street in New Falls. She's just shaking her head. This is unbelievable. It's a community composter, no charge, you know, honor system. And we have about 80 to 90 families that bring their material there. It's this system called the Ecology Box. And it's dry laid cement block, 3 or 4 deep. So it's in the ground, it's up above ground about 2 blocks. And you can use it throughout the winter. What we have there is that can handle a bigger amount and no nothing. There's no problem, no odors. There's a picnic table right there. And it's a really active area on Huguenot Street. It's, you know, historic. There's a lot of people walking. We come there sometimes to check it out, to make sure everything's nice and clean. People are sitting there eating their lunch right next to the compost. So it's really a testimony to what good housekeeping basically can do. I don't want to steal your meeting. This has been great. I love talking about this stuff.
It's awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Many of you will remember how Uber was trying to roll out the same idea to towns, but had so many rules and regulations around it that it was incompatible with any town being willing to go that direction. Certainly something we can keep in mind.
I would add that Ulster County, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, at the county fair had a recycling project for waste generated by vendors. I haven't seen any sign of that at the last 2 fairs. I wondered if anybody had any idea of what happened to that.
Well, Josephine was saying they've been contacted by the Ulster County Fair to see whether that would be something that they would use. You guys are welcome to stay, by the way.
We designed a system for the fair, and it was like a 2-part system. So the fair is unusual because people come there and they live there. And so the first part would take care of that and make them aware of the expansion. And then when you actually analyze the waste stream, the weight of the waste stream is in the prep waste, right? Mm-hmm. And the prep waste is relatively easy to get. So that's what we would focus on first. It's just getting that. Right.
Exactly.
And then the other waste is the post-consumer waste.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that would be added on. And then people would be able to make that work to purchase. So if you look at the Barley Festival, what makes that work is all the vendors buy the right stuff so that there's just one organic waste stream with the uneaten food and the compostable disposal. So that's what makes the collection possible.
And what do you do with composting you generate at your site?
We make a series of products for it, and we make a lot of different kinds of compost. So what you saw in the slideshow, that mix, right, it is we make a product with that cleans water. And we made the soil that was used to clean the water, the runoff from 299. So that's all along the rail trail there, and they have bio swales and they have organic sand filters. So we made that out of those columns. So there's a lot of demand and for that kind of nutrient rich and certain microorganisms in it. So when we get the spec, they want to know what's in it, what's living in it, and then what it's made of. And we're able to meet that spec with food waste companies. So it's an added value product. We can't really make enough of it. That's why we're out here like trying to get more.
But we make a lean compost blend that gardeners love. So that's another thing. We're very particular about product, what to do and how it's used. Because when we've been doing this so long, on the New York State Freeway, exit 16, which is Harriman, and it's a huge, we made all the biofiltration soil back to 2003. We can't remember now. That takes care of all that runoff. Mm-hmm. And the way biofiltration works is that it has all the microbes in that soil so that the grease and all the stuff that runs off the roads, actually they eat it. Like, I know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like they live in that. So they never had to replace that, is what I'm saying. So that was a great job.
It maintains
itself. We've done constructed wetlands and all that kind of stuff where the same way they don't require work. It's once you make them. Yeah.
Anyway, we need to move on, and I thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Really.
And I'm sure you can contact both of you separately. Yeah. We can get your information.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah.
Mark, since Emily's online, you want to run the next section since you were head of the nominating committee, or at least a part of the nominating committee?
I was a part. The nominating committee consisted of Dave, Emily, and myself. We had a number of names to contact. And Dave, don't go on.
I'm going to sneeze out a second. But go ahead.
We have spoken with Kristen, and as a chairperson for the next coming year, this year. And Vicki as vice chair. And Neil has agreed to stay on as secretary for the new year. So we are presenting these three positions.
Yes. Liaison to the energy. committee? If you're still willing to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
right?
I can do it. Thank you.
So we should do these each, unless anybody has any questions.
I would move to accept the recommendations of the committee and cast a unanimous vote for them unless somebody else has a another candidate.
Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate that.
Thank you, Dave, for all your leadership all these years.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. You're up.
I think you're up.
Department of the Environment update. I'm wearing a mask tonight because I'm a little bit forced, so I won't keep it necessarily brief. Apologies in advance, but I've been popping fit. I'll step out and I will not be my esteemed colleague Evelyn to fill it. So,
you want to let Emily to the hands up?
Did Emily want to speak first about the nominating
yeah.
committee? Yeah, let's defer to Emily because she kind of facilitated the nominating committee and then I'll provide my brief update.
Yeah,
perfect. Emily, I think we're trying to unmute you here.
Yes. Oh, no. Okay. Thank you. I wanted to thank the nominating committee and Kristen and Victoria for taking the positions and also Neil. I did want to say that we did have a lot of discussions and agreements that we would all help Kristen and Victoria take on this task with perhaps for things like suggesting speakers, helping to get a speaker, those kind of things, so that they're not tasked just alone and working with Department of the Environment on that. So we do need help from everyone to make their responsibility a little less onerous or whatever. So I just wanted to make sure that people understood that they're accepting these positions with the understanding that we're going to give some help in it. And thank you to the rest of our nominating committee for helping this. So Mark Ellison and Dave Haldeman.
Did you finish?
No, I'm getting started.
Okay, please go ahead.
Well, I guess I'll first say thank you to everyone for taking that on. Dave, thank you so much for your years of service as EMC chair. Really appreciated working with you and really appreciate your initiative in lining up speakers and taking some of the burden of managing it all off our plate. So really, thank you so much. And I look forward to working with you in the future in different capacities. So.
That's of course reciprocal, guys.
Yes.
The office does a tremendous amount of work for us.
And then also thank you for the nominating committee. I appreciate that everyone got together and had a solution oriented and we have a plan moving into 2025. On that note, I guess I wanted to start with membership updates for the EMC. We're going to take a look, me and my colleague Evelyn Ellis. Thank you, Evelyn, for being here. She's Environment's deputy, who was here last month, and you'll see her face occasionally at meetings. So Evelyn and I and Michelle Block, who I think most of you know, we're taking a look at the membership list and making sure that all the municipalities, to the extent that they're interested, are available to have representatives on the EMC. Off the top of my head, I know that Woodstock their rep to this EMC had resigned, so we definitely thank you, Dave, for the reminder. We need to reach out to the Woodstock Environmental Conservation Commission. I thought Ken Hansen was here. Oh, there he is. Okay. So I'm sure he'll bring word back to Woodstock as well that we're going to be reaching out to the supervisor and the chair of the Woodstock Environmental Commission to check on their membership. I know that Lisa has been attending. Thank you, Lisa, for your patience and your participation on behalf of the town of Marbletown, the ECC, the Environmental Conservation Commission there. So I have your card. I will email you, connect with my colleagues, and we'll see your reviewed tools and information you need to bring it to your town board. Usually it involves a town board resolution that goes back to us through the process, as are many things. But also, you know, as long, it's basically the town board nominates a representative, usually someone that sits on the local environmental committee or board. And then basically it just goes, that's goes through our exec's office and to our county legislature. And then finally you get appointed and you go put your name on the website and then you appear the voting member. And so it helps.
Yeah, I apologize. I thought that.
And I apologize.
That is started, but it did drop somewhere. So we'll figure it out.
Yes. So thank you for reminding me and you're definitely on top of it. Off the top of my head, I think it's also the town of Lloyd. Maybe the other one with an environmental committee that just has not had the capacity to participate. But again, I know that's one of the further flung towns from here. And I know they have a very busy and active CAC. So, you know, again, even if they don't have capacity to officially send a representative, reminding that towns that there's the Zoom option as well, even if they just want to listen in and share the information. So just letting everyone know, we're open to reminders and suggestions, but we are on top of that. I just wanted to also say thank you to Anna from Cornell Cooperative for sitting in as well. I know that you participate and provide, you know, direct technical assistance in this valley. So it's really great that you've been attending here with us. So thank you for that. As far as grants and funding opportunities, I'm sad to announce that we did not get the MS4 mapping grant that we had applied for. We had applied for the maximum of $400,000. Because we were applying on behalf of all the regulated municipalities, MS4, the stormwater regulated municipalities in the county. There's a new stormwater permit issued by the DEC. There's more regulations, more requirements for mapping, all kinds of things that we really want to help build capacity and technical ability in the local municipalities. We were not awarded that funding. We had an e-brief with the DEC and they said, great application. We don't care that you didn't have a stormwater coalition. We would have awarded it, but you need to submit a worksheet for every single one of the 15 municipalities that have it for 4 or 5. Again, there's towns like Marble Town and others that have a tiny little sliver of the town that's in the MS4 area. So now we know in future years, either don't include those towns and don't submit worksheets, or we have to take on the burden, probably our staff, to kind of compile. Yeah, so our plan is to reapply with this year's consults.
Do you know how long does it have to be renewed? Or is it once it's done?
So it's the mapping?
No, the application.
So this was part of the New York State Consolidated Funding Application. That's like a cohort of dozens of New York State agencies that coordinate to release all the grants every year, and they usually announce the grants in May. The opportunities are announced in May, the application deadline is July, and then they let everyone know who's actually awarded the grants in December usually. So we just learned in December we didn't get it. We're going to take the debrief information and revise the application as needed and hopefully put it up and submit by this year's fall if the funding is changed. Sometimes the request for applications, you know, they might change things, but I wouldn't think that would change all that much. So I was happy to hear it wasn't even the stormwater coalition. And we have Rob Perry here, who has the unique expertise in this area. So we might run into some questions by you for the chairs as well. So I'll be curious when we do the roundtable to hear what grants for the CFA under your accounts may have gotten. Watersheds coordination. We talked, I think, quite a bit about the lower SOPIS and the implementation plan and how one of the priority projects and recommendations that came out of that is hiring the watersheds or creating a watersheds or watershed coordinator position to kind of help shepherd that list of several dozen priority projects in the lower SOPIS stream management plan. The county and other entities have really taken that to heart and really see the value and the importance of watersheds coordination and playing that with an S at the end. So basically, in the county's 2025 operating budget, they included $100,000 for its watersheds coordination, and the goal is going to be basically there'll be a 3-year contract with the Soil and Water Conservation District. They will be hiring a watersheds coordinator who the idea is 50% of their time will be spent exclusively on assisting with the lower SOPIS priority projects that came out of that implementation plan. The other 50% of the time they'll be supporting the other watersheds in the county, primarily not outside the New York City watershed, primarily on Rondout and Long. So just so everyone knows for your towns that that impacts, there may be additional capacity resources or landings. Not going to happen overnight, but Soil and Water Conservation District has initiated the hiring process. If you look on their website, I think the position, is that right, Evelyn? I think it's still open. Position.
Yeah, it's open until the end of next month, the end of February.
Oh, really? It's that long?
Well, they just posted it, and they said it'll be open at least for a month.
That's great. Okay. And my understanding is already a couple of potentially strong candidates, which is great that just here, because again, I think it's inherently complex, but going to be a really beneficial position in the long run. So. My last update, and then I'll just leave it for if anyone has questions, is Climate Smart Community Certification. The county's silver level certification, we need to file with DEC next year for our second five-year silver level recertification. We're going to try to get our ducks in a row and submit for the last deadline this year, which is, I think it's September. A lot of paperwork, you can imagine, silver level, those of you who are working on this, and also for the county. Coordinating across 2 dozen departments in the county is a lot of work, but we're turning our eyes to that as well. So we'll see where that lands. That's it for me.
Any quick question?
What would the watershed coordinator do?
That's introduce the welcome.
I mean, I think the job description is carefully crafted to kind of describe this because, again, it could be infinite, really, right? Like, what is watershed conservation? What is, I think, really the primary goal would be to coordinate with the watershed groups first and foremost, right? So, lower SOCIS, there's the Lower SOCIS Advisory Committee. They're pretty far along because the Lower SOCIS has the advisory committee, they have a stream implementation plan, they have a list of priority implementation projects. And there's $2 million in this, this fund sitting there to help advance this project, right? So I think Lower SOCIS is really ripe for the opportunity. They just need someone to. So I think that Lower SOCIS is somewhat self-explanatory. It's going to be connecting the multiple stakeholders and the Lower SOCIS Advisory Committee with the potential funding, right? That $2 million in funding that will help advance this project. I think it's a little more to be determined as far as the specifics on the other two watersheds I mentioned. But again, I know Rondout Creek Watershed Alliance, I got wind that they're reconvening. I know Long Hill is already incorporated, right? As a 501c3 nonprofit. So I think that it's, again, working with those formal or informal watershed groups to start at first and foremost. But again, also working with within the Soil and Water Conservation District. They're already actually implementing a lot of this priority watershed work. So it's, I think, also just about figuring out what are additional priorities that this capacity and to do first, and maybe funding other communities that may become support in those scholarships where it doesn't exist. That's sufficient.
Any
questions?
Yes.
There wasn't a meeting in January.
That probably answers that, don't
they? They had a regular the legislature and everything is reorganizing in January, so far.
Good. Good. That's quite what we get more than from that. Update for the NYSAC Conference Conservation Council's will be held in Ulster County. I can't say that we're much more advanced. We're meeting every couple of weeks online. However, I mean, really advanced from where I was the last time. No, we still are struggling with the venue and therefore the dates. We are starting to reach out various categories of presentation that we're looking at. We're starting to reach out, find out if the people who will be willing to present on those topics. But until we really get the basics down, we are working hard on that. And we know we've got to do it at this point. It's been 2 months we've been planning with various ideas. And the fact that there's a Greenway conference that was right smack in the same time period that, and in the same county that we had already had knocked out numerous venues and of course dealing to many of the same people. So anyway, I can't say any more about that.
on the Smart Communities Action Participation. Was that you, Robert? You talked about this a while back. I'm not sure what that is there.
I don't have a specific update except to say there's, again, I think some folks on this committee have been pretty important with ongoing discussions. There's a special meeting at the Climate Smart Committee. I believe Ken, were you there? There's a couple of those. Maybe Kristen, you were in one of those. Sorry to call out folks by name, but I'm just acknowledging that there's others that may have information to share as well. Basically, there's ongoing discussion with the legislature, the chair of the legislature, and then the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee as a subcommittee, I believe, but we're still looking into the technicalities, which is the Climate Smart Committee. And so again, they're just talking about potentially restructuring, aligning more with the Climate Smart Communities program potentially. I think there's been some acknowledgement on everyone's end that it's been a little bit confusing because that committee kind of asks for Climate Smart Communities reports and things like that, but it's a very small committee. My understanding, I think it's a maximum of 5 members, and it's not focused on local municipalities and their engagement with the Climate Smart Communities program. So just from my perspective, that's one thing that I brought to light. And there's just a lot of other things. But in the end, that's a legislative decision, and the legislature will continue to, discuss that. And ultimately, if they decide to restructure that committee, I will share that information away.
Sure. I'll just add to that, we went to a couple of meetings and we offered our input. I think, we kind of left it that something the legislature decide what to do. And then once they announce it, which they probably should by next month, then we'll just adjust to whatever they decide. So we're sort of a wait and see at this point. Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of discussion, as you well know, about do they integrate with this committee and so forth and so on. We've had discussion about that. The last thing on this, the non-flushable wipes, which was started by Roberta, and we sent out all the flyers and everything. That's about where that is. If you were able then to take the flyer and distribute it throughout your community, that was really helpful. And if there's anything else going on in your towns that you think you can share, that we should be sharing with our residents in our communities, that would be well appreciated. Believe it or not, this can't be. We're down to a roundabout real quickly. Unless you have a comment, anything you'd like to share?
Well, I received your email about the conference and speakers, so I did want to note that our energy advisors are able to speak to some of like the battery storage or grid topics, and they're just kind of discussing. We have an Ulster County Energy Advisor, and then his supervisor is actually in Dutchess County. That's why is it ever clear or not clear. But they do have the capacity and willingness to speak on that.
Actually. That's none. I got my list of 4 or 5, and that's 2. So this is great. But keep me in the loop on it.
Yeah.
But that's wonderful. I just heard today there's tremendous battery storage in California right now, where there's solar energy, tremendous. I mean, they increased it by, I hate to say this, don't quote me, 70% over the last 2 years. It's the storage capacity.
Two things on that, because I have a lot of solar development clients, and they'd love to do battery storage in New York, but the incentives are not significant in New York for them to do that. And in Central Hudson Service Territory in particular, the tariffs are so high that they would go anywhere in New York other than Central Hudson Service Territory.
Plus,
it's
by Central Hudson on connection to their grid for the storage.
Sure.
And it's part of the rate case, which is ongoing. But the Department of Public Service doesn't seem to be paying any attention to that. And the big companies like NextEra took advantage of the storage incentives from New York when they were high and put plants in, but they're not even doing it now across New York because the incentives are dropped.
Right. And we've mentioned this before, too. There are several towns that have some regulations around battery storage. We had a solar group that came in. Actually, they have it up and running at this point in time, but originally their plan included battery storage. And that town board said just to table that because they didn't want to deal with the fact that they really should have regulations. We have asked them several times to consider doing that. They have not. Still going to get stuck with it one of these days when one of these guys comes in and says,
We need, we're left to put in a solar, but we need to have this battery storage. And you got to have the regulations for fire and everything else, you know. Anyway, would you like to start?
Town of Olive, our first comprehensive plan is in draft form and being commented on by the boards and committees. It will hopefully go to public hearings and be complete and signed off in the first quarter of this year. Our open space inventory, our grant application was submitted and we're awaiting a response, which is due early this year. Community choice aggregation, we're in the process of doing the community outreach for the next roughly 90 days with our selected CCA administrator, which is Jewel. So they would plan to go to the market for energy supply along with everyone else in the Hudson Valley Community Power Group first half of this year. And solar mapping, our report is in the process of preparation, identifying sites suitable for solar in the town as part of the Climate Act 70% renewables by 2030. And hopefully all you towns are doing the same thing if you haven't already done it. Put out a plug for the Renewable Energy Implementation Plan Working Group, on which I sit, chaired by Manager Green.
What I'm going to try to do, because I always forget these people that are online. So as we go down one row, I'm going to go ask one of them and so forth and so on. So, Emily, do you have anything from Kingston that you'd like to share with us? She's muted, but otherwise.
Yes, I do have some things to share. First of all, I wanted to point out that the DEC, the DEC is providing a webinar on February 6th on wetlands of unusual importance. And they're also starting to work again for signups on the amphibian migration road crossing projects. I'm going to pass out I'll send that information to the to Michelle or whoever we're trying to send that to. And so I'm just sending the registration for the wetlands. And then we have an air quality monitoring program with Bard College, and we had a presentation which really did again point out that burning wood is the most the largest source of the soot, which is a 2.5 micron pollution, and that causes a lot of lung and heart and can be fatal, and that wood burning is worse than, you know, gas and oil and so on. The wood burning is actually the worst in the whole state of New York for any other combustion, and that the best thing we can do is at least to educate so that people are not using recreational fires, which is, you know, cuddling up in front of your fireplace kind of thing, or having sitting around the bonfire or something. And then our community preservation fund, people have applied to be on that advisory committee, so that's moving forward. We did for the Lower Asopa Stream Management Implementation Plan, we asked the Common Council to pass a resolution, and that should happen really soon. We are also thinking about sending a letter about the landfill leachate, leachate loophole, and the Riverkeeper, the people basically that have put out that report have asked communities to send letters to ask that these rules with the DEC be changed. And we're also meeting next week with our sewage treatment person to get more information about what, not just flushable wipes, but other issues with whatever people flush down the toilet, to see how we can engage in the flushable wipes campaign, or just helping our sewage treatment plant operator with whatever help he could use. And that's all.
Good. Thank you very much. Mark.
Time to be selfish. That line on the flushable wipes, the town of Fort Ewing doesn't have to really worry about it because we send everything over to Kingston.
Yes.
Well, we had our last repair cafe on Saturday. I don't know how many we've had all together, but it seems to be working very well. We do it every other month, last Saturday of the month. So our next one will be March 29th. The chairperson for the town of East Office Environmental Board has stepped down after 14 years. And I've been replaced by two co-chairs. So we're doing a reorganization right now. We have a board of nine. We were down to six, and at our last meeting, I think we got three more coming on board. So that should be good. And we also just have received word of a $15,000 grant. I don't remember what it was for. I don't have any information. That's about it.
Ken? Well, I really thank you for being here.
the Woodstock representative, our representative resigned in September, and Woodstock tries to maintain the tradition of drama on some of these things. So we weren't sure if the resignation was actually accepted, if the resignee had actually completed and rescinded the resignation, and where it stood. So I asked David to try and give us a letter that's saying that she has resigned so that we could act on it. I haven't seen a copy of that letter yet, so we'll still have some follow-up before we can close the loop on actually getting a replacement.
Is this chair or what?
It's Aaron Moran used to be the
representative
of to this organization.
The letter is in the department right now.
It hasn't been sent. Oh well, then that's why I haven't seen
it.
And so the loop has not been closed yet. So we really can't make any move until we get official notification that the position is actually open at the county level. Just some other things that Woodstock has been doing. This last year, we were working with the Hudson Valley Regional Council updating our community greenhouse gas emissions, the community greenhouse climate action plan. We also did the governmental greenhouse gas emissions and governmental community action plan. Did that whole package of greenhouse gas emissions updates, and those have now been resubmitted to the Climate Smart administrators in the January session, to get us a recertification at the bronze level. A couple of years ago, we passed the CEA, the critical environmental area, for a major area of Woodstock. And now that is coming under development. And we're in the process of recommending to the planning, we have recommended to the planning board that the wetlands and watercourse maps be updated based on the new regulations, which generally talk about, which have just become effective January 1st of this year. And February 20th, the county seems to be holding I think it's some sort of disaster recovery plan at the Ulster SUNY. We have three people from the Howie Department going, I haven't heard from the fire department yet, but we'll be participating in that upcoming event.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. Neil, you want to do it, or you want Roberta or both of you, or what? How you want to do this?
I'll start. Couple things. Let's see. We're trying to get an initiative off the ground to prepare to develop fire preparedness planning for Gardner. Last fall's drought kind of brought home that this could be an issue, and we're also looking at turtle and amphibian migration routes, thinking about signage and, you know, trying to bring that to drivers' awareness.
Just so you know, I have a gentleman on my town council who does surveys of salamanders every year. So if you need some help there, I can pass them to you.
Thank you. Making a note of that. Okay. And let's see, we're also trying to develop a water conservation awareness campaign for the town before this summer. Not knowing what to expect, but trying to be prepared. And we continue to work on updating our wetlands and water course law. It's been a long process, but we want to get it right and get it into a form that the town board will hopefully accept it and be able to implement. That's it, Roberta. You got anything?
No, nothing to add tonight.
I didn't quite hear you, Roberta. Speak up.
No, nothing to add tonight.
Okay, thank you. Bill, anything quick as a member at large here?
No.
Okay, good.
From the town of Hurley, we had our kickoff meeting for our natural resource inventory project. We met with it was the CAC Hudsonia, who's doing the intensive analysis, habitat analysis of the parts of town, and also the DEC contract administrator. So we met together and kicked off the meeting and got organized. So that's exciting. Hurley was kind of tripped up by this leachate issue because, as it turns out, we've been trucking our leachate to the city of Kingston's water treatment plant. And apparently the amount, the levels of PFAS and PFOS are too high, according to state regulations for the town, for the city of Kingston to process the leachate. So right now, we're storing it on site until the town can find someone who can take it and process. And with regards to the
so what's happening with the leachate and how the Kingston can dump it?
The town supervisor is frantically searching for some place that will be able to take it and process it.
Yeah, got it. That's our solution.
Yeah. With regard to the renewable energy implementation plan, our Climate Smart Task Force is we discussed for this year maybe reaching out to commercial sites and people who have large rooms to maybe put solar on them if possible, or in their parking lots, or in their on their grounds if they have land that's not being used. So that was one avenue that we were thinking of pursuing this year as we
did do our solar mapping project a couple years ago, so we have, you know, some candidates to approach. And finally, we are the Climate Smart Committee, along with the Safety Committee for Climate Committee. It's a newly formed committee. We have it's not contracted, but Cornell Cooperative Extension is going to, Anna is going to meet with us together and help us put together an emergency plan for the after. We think the GALF meeting could have a meeting before it be best started.
And yeah, you were so correct. All of these warehouses, all buildings like this with big flat rooms out in the middle of nowhere, solar. Maybe this should be using. It's a shame. That I just traveled from Pennsylvania and there's one section headed down towards Bethel East. Where it was all, it was a turkey farm. This theater that we're building, now it is 16 different huge warehouses. None of them have anything.
But part of the consideration there is that the roof has to have the capability to support.
I understand that. So therefore,
well, unfortunately, the building codes do not have that in it. And the other part of it is they're not built to do anything more than the simple build-up roof that they have.
Is that a shame?
Yeah.
And we should change our codes with regards to that. Yes. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for Town of Rochester. We are allowed to have 9 members on our ECC, and we're getting close. About 7, and I think one more to be approved. We have quite a bit of interest, so that's good. It's different talent coming in. Another thing is our town just did a brand new launch of the updated website. More pictures, more color in it, and finally have an ECC homepage on the website, which has a little more information. And then the last thing we're doing is town just came through with a whole new set of codes, zoning codes, updated. I don't know when the last time the town updated their zoning code, but it's over 100 pages long, and we're going through looking for the parts of the code that we had hoped they would update, you know, for more protection of the environment and so on. The wetland one, we're still looking into that. As far as the definition of wetland, they defer to the one that just took effect on January 1st, with the DEC. The other thing we're looking at is we have an aquifer protection overlay district in town of Rochester. It's essentially parallel to 209. And they added a whole new list of restrictions, you know, prohibited uses in that area. One of them, of course, is gasoline stations. They want to prohibit gasoline stations, which we have quite a few in our town already. But sure enough, this is overlapping with something before the planning board to put in the convenience store gasoline station. So we're going to see how that new code falls in with the application process. We'll keep a close eye on that. Another thing of note, I don't know if the county has committed to a landfill within the county, but I see wording in our new code, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an expert on this legalese, but it seems that we are prohibiting the use of any parcel in our town for a landfill. And I don't know if that was our court maybe. But it didn't seem like the county had looked at any sites in our town anyway. That's where we're at.
Not much new. The police car and the building inspector car are paid for. And we got
our EVs.
Are they EVs? Yeah, they're.
Oh, actually.
Yeah. Paid for DEC funding, which is gone. And that's, yeah. We also have $200,000 to contribute to the upgrade of the Rondell Municipal Center, share with Marlton.
Mm-hmm.
But Justin Driscoll, who is the head of the IPA, doesn't seem to be paying very much attention to this. Involved in the big case and whatever else I'm citing. We haven't made a great deal of progress. Marbletown is contributing more than Rosenville. And we'd love to get started. We both got SEMA grants for a solar array in the backyard, but it's sleepy time.
Sleepy, but if you were out of funds, were able to contribute to 2 electric vehicles to the town.
And 200,000.
And
200,000. Yeah.
Yes.
And a plug-in.
You mean you've got a charge station?
Yeah, we did. And I'm working with Lisa, which is not Cindy Tunnel, but she's been talking about it.
Oh, that's the best stuff.
Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to talk about.
Awesome.
Okay, then go ahead.
Marlton. We were talking about the leachate. A couple of our members went to the webinar. We'll learn more about that next time. And the Lower Surface Stream Management Plan is gung-ho. But what I just wanted to mention was that the third Thursday environmental series, the one in February, February 20th, it's going to be a Zoom presentation by Ben Walcott from Sarah Hanna's office and Tom Conrad. And they're going to talk about the Hudson Valley Power Authority interest in Central Hudson. But what's different about this one is that because when we talked about it at the town board, it didn't go well, largely because there was a big empty question was the finances weren't mentioned at all. So Tom Conrad scrambled and put together a nice slideshow with an estimate of different scenarios of the financial for this takeover. So if you're interested in that, that's the next third Thursday presentation, 6:30 on February 20th. And if you're not already on the list, you can send your name to Third Thursday Series at gmail.com.
And all of their YouTube, all of their presentations are on YouTube.
Yes.
And they're available all the way back.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And you could always send to the department who can send it to us.
I will do that.
It's called the Third Thursday Environmental Series, and that's the email. It's Third Thursday Series at gmail.com.
I'm saying third spelled out?
Yes, good question. All lowercase. THIRD.
Thank you. Sarah, I'm down there. Sarah Larson, you still on with us? So you need to unmute.
Yes, Sarah.
That one, William Underhill.
Sarah, if you're there, this is time to bring us up to date.
Okay, there. I think I unmuted it. Do you hear me?
You are here, yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah, thanks. So the report from the township of Wawarsing, couple of things. The village of Ellenville, which is, you know, within the township of Wawarsing, is working on their water source study, a similar one that's the township already completed, but now they're doing it for the village of Ellenville and working to make sure they know where their two or three water wells for the village are. And at least one of them is on private or on or right near private property on one of the old hotel grounds. The committee is working on trying to revamp or revive a water source protection overlay district and forming that. So we'll be talking about that at our next meeting. And of course, the overarching issue that's on everybody's mind in Wawarsing is the siting of the county dump at one of two proposed sites there. And there is quite a bit of local opposition from the people who live on the Milk Road site area. The Brown Road was already kind of punted over to Milk Road. So as you can well imagine, nobody wants a dump in their backyard, especially that these areas are pristine and completely unspoiled. You know, it's not as if they're old brownfields or old industrial sites that are already, you know, have issues. So we'll see where that goes. But the local paper, the Shawangunk Journal, is giving very good coverage of the back and forth. I know that the little citizens committee that's been formed went to the Ulster County Legislature, their last meeting, and did a whole presentation and presented their views. And the WECC has also written a letter to the town, you know, with some reservations about the two sites. But so that's an ongoing process, and we'll see. The place in Seneca Falls, is it, where all of Ulster County regular garbage has been trucked, is supposedly shutting down, I believe, at the end of this year. They may try to get that extended. That would punt it along for another year or so. But right now we're all acting on the supposition that we will have to find a place in Ulster County for a countywide dump. And of course, we'd all much rather have 100%, you know, recycling and zero waste and all that. But there's work to be done. Anyway, so that's my report.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Emily and Heather Gambers.
Emily. Emily, you got a question?
Hi. Yes, thank you. I can't tell what order you're in. I didn't mean to jump in. I wanted to remind everyone.
That's okay.
I wanted to remind everyone that the county put out a agricultural plan, and their comments are due on Friday. If anyone is interested in looking at that plan, and maybe Europa can tell people how to find it.
Is in Friday the 31st?
Yes.
And I had a Wawarsing point for Sarah. New York City put out a request for expressions of interest in putting solar on non-forested, more than 10-acre sites that they have across both the east of the Hudson and west of the Hudson watershed sites. And there was one in Ulster County. And that one is in the town of Wawarsing. And Sarah, there's another site that they own that they're apparently interested in talking about. I wonder if you and I could have a separate conversation in the next day or so about those.
Yeah, that would be great. See, I'll put my phone number in the chat, I guess.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Great. One of the purposes of the evening is for that. Before I forget, because it was on my mind before, a potential future speaker should be somebody from the EDC about this new wetlands regulation. We all ought to be versed in the size, how they're determining that, where we can find the information on that. But as every one of our towns is coming in, and some builders are coming in, some planners are coming in, using old federal stuff that doesn't count anymore at all. And we need to be aware of that.
Oh, it's a webinar on February 6th.
Yeah, but if we can make chat for those things. It'd be nice to have somebody here right for us.
Vicki from the town of Ulster, now our CACU is actually the town of Ulster Citizens.org, we're a citizens organization. We have a lot of issues in the town of Ulster, and because of a lot of our activism, we've gotten the town of Ulster to take a look at our comprehensive plan and revise it. Because of all the things that are happening in the town of Ulster, we have a development that they want to put almost 300 units of housing on the hill behind Adams. Real problem with that because of a lot of traffic. They want to use Adams driveway, and they're also going to be clear cutting 69 acres of forest, and there's also a big wetland on that site. There's also a possible historic building up there too that one of our citizens has researched, and there's a lot of history in that. So that's the Whitestone development. And then we're also, there's a solar array that they want to put up, and they also want to cut down 26 acres. So between the two, they're on a ridge that is actually supposed to be protected, and it's within the comprehensive plan that this ridge is not supposed to be developed. Okay, so we brought up the fact that, you know, the comprehensive plan, you know, identifies this property, although they did change the zoning when they did the comprehensive plan. So so that's the predicament that we're in. So between the two projects, over almost 100 acres of forest would be cut down. So we've gone to the planning board, the county planning board, when this was on their agenda, and they have listened to us, five of us were speaking, and they did a lot of recommendations based on our concerns, although the town of Ulster, you know, doesn't have to do the recommendations, but it's a start. We also are talking about the Xena development. That's also in Woodstock and Ulster. It was supposed to be Woodstock National, but now they cut that all down, and now they want to do these multi-million-dollar houses on the parcel in Ulster. But you can't get there from Ulster. You have to go around and go through Woodstock. And that's a very sensitive area because it's right next to Woodstock Land Trust. It's like 500 acres of forest there. And then this would, so it's right, you know, it's very sensitive area. And, you know, it's very important to have a lot of forest together for a good amount of biodiversity. We've been talking against that, but we'll see, because the Broad and Gun Club will also lose 20 acres of their land because of the bunker system that has to be. So, you know, there's a lot of opposition.
Ruby has already said no way, no how.
Yes, right.
They were approached for access.
Right, and Ruby said, right. And
Ruby said, go away.
Right, and so did their gun club. And
won't let me.
I'm sorry?
They won't let me in the gun club, so.
Oh, well, but that's another issue.
For committee.
Right. And but, you know, the town of Ulster, you know, we've been, you know, everything is yes in the town of Ulster. So, you know, this citizen group has really been active. And I go to the town board meetings every single month. And I'm also going to the planning board meetings. We're very active. And so we are now, the town board is agreeing to take a look at the comprehensive plan. So I'd like some input from the other townships that are already doing this, because I need to, I mean, we're reviewing our old plan, okay, our old comprehensive plan. And, but then we also want to do, you know, a natural resources inventory that the town falls through, you know, and I need to know, you know, how about best to go do that. You know, other things. So, if anybody
can use any suggestions, have they had any input relative to the depending on what source you use, 300 to 800 units, when built residential at the IBM site?
Oh, that's still in progress. Unfortunately, the person who was heading that. I can't remember his name, but he passed away, unfortunately. So that kind of put a little stoppage on that project. But natural, I can't remember the name, I-87, they're still in it. It's just that, you know, they have to catch up. So there's going to be, there's going to be at least 800 units. So, you know, now we have 800 units that might go in there. Then you have a 300 units over here. Then you have a hotel that they have already approved between Tractor Supply and Optimum across from Adam. So, you know, we're looking at this traffic, you know, and it's like, you know, holy crap, you know, that 9W area is so congested. I mean, I know it was pretty bad when IBM was here, but it's pretty bad no matter what. And, you know, even during the holidays and everything, you can't get anywhere. I mean, you have to really, you know, plan your time. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going in the town of Ulster, and we're trying to keep up with it as much as possible. We do have a good group, though. We have quite a few, you know, we have a lot of people from Glenary now, and we have, you know, from the town of Ulster, you know, from Lincoln Park area and stuff. So we're growing in numbers.
Well, I guess I can have some input. This is happening in Newport. We just got very lucky. We got a pretty heavy hit with just joining our board, Fran Dunwell. She's the director of New York State's estuary program, and they're the ones that they give out a lot of grants on a regular basis. So that's a good thing. Right now, she's working on a new a tree law for the town, and she's working on this idea of a natural forest, a sustainable forest on 50 acres. And she has actually it's two properties, it's two 50 acre properties. So it's 100 acres of forest land. She's working on this with an arborist. And, you know, she showed the plans to the planning board, the environmental board. And they were like, wow, that's fantastic. You know, get rid of the invasive species, any the brush buildup they were concerned about, a fire problems. All these different things that we'd be concerned about in the forest and trying to fix. And so, anyway, that was it. That's a good thing. And let's see. And also, the village group calls, they barely make a quorum, so I didn't report back to them. That's all I have.
Thank you. And if you're expert in forestry and so forth, there's always been this question: if you have a mature forest, and that is, of course, exchanging oxygen, carbon dioxide, and you tear that all down and you put a slope in there, where is the balance in this, if there is a balance in that? And I'm not, at least people on our board who are better in the know, don't have any real concept is that, has that actually been extended over 5 years or 10 years, and where do you come out at the end of 5 or 10 years?
We did those calculations and stuff.
We did?
Can you pass those on to us somehow? Just send it to.
It's quite a while ago.
Well, you can dig them up. Pass it to the department, and then we'll send it out to those guys.
They, you know, I did some research, and I can't, you know, really answer your question. But I've done some research because of, you know, my denseness of solar array up on the ridge. And it doesn't make sense to really cut down a lot of trees for a solar array, because the solar array will, yes, prevent carbon dioxide from going into the air by not burning fossil fuels, but it can't take away carbon dioxide like a tree can. And it can't produce the oxygen that we need. So
plus all the other things, erosion control going down.
Right, and erosion control, and when soil erodes, then that also releases carbon dioxide. So, you know, solar is good, but you have to have trees in order to have a partnership here. And the more trees you cut down, the less oxygen and the less carbon you're going to have sequestered, you know, and that kind of stuff. So one tree will give off enough oxygen for four people in a day. And that's from the U.S. Forest Service.
That's a mature.
You know, and they can also, depending on the type of tree,
right,
oak or whatever, they can sequester 500 to 1,900 pounds of carbon a year and more as, you know, a mature tree. So you're talking about a lot of what a tree can do, and it also has to do with water. When you get rain, fog, or snow, or whatever, you know, the tree, you know, will take what it needs, and then the rest evaporates back into the air, so that more rain abounds. And if you cut trees, you're limiting the amount of water that will be produced as rain, and then then drought occurs, you know? So it's a water cycle thing too that we're talking about. So, you know, we really don't really want to cut down trees. But there's NYSERDA has a policy where you only cut down 10%
Anyway, not much from Sean. I just learned yesterday that we were turned down for our pollinator garden grant. So, still got a grant out there for a charging station. And nothing much else going on as far as development or anything, Sean. Rail truck connections are still blocked by the prison system. And just the natives. Anything else that anyone has at this point? I forgot your name, so I'm sorry. Oh. That's why I hollered Rosendale.
Elka had a meeting of supervisors sometime in the fall and announced that they had applied for a grant that would cover the cost of aerators for all of the transfer stations. And it's not happening. They didn't get the grant, so you were waiting around.
I'm glad you mentioned the one in Shango looks like a trash dump right now. I mean, you've got your bins for the usual stuff to recycle, but you have to wind your way through the TVs, the barrels, the mattresses, the tires, everything. It's just horrible. And I have no idea what's going on or why your is not dealing with any of that at all. But it's a nightmare. I don't know whether any of you are experiencing that in your own radio station, but this is horrible.
Have you tried calling Oliver about it?
Any contact with both the supervisor and the guy who operates the down transfer station. I don't know. You know, so there they go.
For Rochester, we're fairly fortunate. We have two full-time brand new staff at the transfer station, in addition to, I think, there are one or two full-time, over 4 days a week operation. And these two
new positions. They just stand guard over recycling. No black plastic. They know all the rules. They're well trained, and flatten the cardboard, and they make the place neat as a thing.
What do you guys do with the metal, the electronics, the tires, the battery stuff?
Metal, we have a separate container, and I was told it doesn't go through Ukra. We actually make some money.
It's another idle stuff. I wind my way around.
Yeah, and although the full-time staff has to keep people out of that metal container because they'll see the copper or aluminum, some people dumpster dive. What was the other one? The
tires.
Tires, they charge the going rate. I forget where the town brings those, but it's very pricey to get rid of it.
Yeah, and I don't know whether the town of Ulster accepts electronics or anything.
Yeah, it's our town. I don't know where they go. We also have a program, all the appliances with refrigerant are in one location. It looks very messy when they accumulate. So recently, they have all the refrigerant recovered. And hauled away. Well, once that's done, it's mostly the scrap out of right now.
Once the refrigerant is removed, it's classifiable heat with metal. And it is a recoverable commodity that the landfills can be made for.
Right, we can make a little money of that metal. Yeah.
All your landfills shouldn't have segregation because it is highly sought after recyclable material. Doesn't pay a whole lot.
It lines both sides of the ground.
But it is material that is highly recyclable, and having worked for the agency for many years, white goods are high commodities.
Yep. Anyway, I appreciate that. Is there anything else that
dinner?
Yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate you all being here. We'll look forward to Kristen taking over as we get down the line. She'll find out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go home. Be careful out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm really good.
I'm good. No, this ain't good.